Good evening. Well, I'm really glad everyone's here tonight on this evening of expressing gratitude, on this evening of feeling grateful for each other. I'm grateful that we've got that nice heater and that this room is so warm, and grateful that we have this wonderful center, and I've felt the support of a great Sangha all the years that I've been here. I'm grateful for my family and my opportunity to have an education, and I really am grateful for all the people I've worked with at my job over the years. I think all of us could just really go on and on about all the people that have touched us in our lives, all the wonderful places that are so meaningful to us and are so valuable for our well-being. And it's nice to have a holiday to reflect on how connected we are and how important we are to each other. And I think we all see how valuable that reflection, that grateful, wholehearted reflection of our gratitude can be important to us every day. But it's especially nice that we really have this great holiday that we can do that. I won't speak too long tonight. I'll share some words from people on this expression of gratitude. And then we'll have an opportunity to do a short ceremony at the end, a familiar ceremony that just will have the focus of thanks and gratitude in it. It's hard not to think about gratitude the night before Thanksgiving, and I think if we put together a book of all the talks given on Thanksgiving Eve, we'd have a wonderful book on different expressions of gratitude. We just read in Zen Mind Beginner's Mind a line that Suzuki wrote 50 years ago. He said that you should be able to appreciate things as an expression of big mind. This is more than faith. This is ultimate truth, which you cannot reject. Big mind is that is one of those terms that are synonymous, that is synonymous with other Buddhist terms such as Buddha nature, our true face, our original face, this part that we all share. Lately I've been thinking that our whole Buddhist practice is just to maybe remember, maybe actually abide in that big mind, that big spacious mind that rejects nothing, that welcomes everything, that sees everything, that appreciates, as Suzuki says, that appreciates the nature, the very core, the very nature of everything else as not different than the core nature, the true nature, the true face of this being. Can we abide there? Or can we act out of that mind rather than a mind that's smaller, that's our individual ego, that works a little differently, is not as expansive. When we look around the Thanksgiving table tomorrow, can we appreciate everyone at our table as just an expression of big mind? You should be able to appreciate things as an expression of big mind. Everything is an expression of big mind. And maybe you'll be going around the table going, big mind, big mind, big mind, big mind. Uh-oh. Maybe not so big mind. And maybe you'll get stuck and say, oh, I've got to, let me think about that. Let me think about that person. Buddhism also says that it's our responsibility to sort of look at that barrier to the appreciation, the barrier to open-hearted acceptance, and say, I've got to work on that. That's my responsibility. Even if they said the worst thing to me 20 years ago at this very table, I've got to work on that. It's my responsibility to make sure that I can go around that table, big mind, big mind, big mind, big heart, big mind, big heart, and really make sure that it's a clean sweep all the way around. Did I leave anybody out? Is there anybody at the table that I've left out? Could I invite anybody to this table and be able to say, we share that same heart, we share that same mind. I appreciate that person's heart and mind because it's not different than mine. We share that same heart and mind. That's our practice. And that's what Suzuki goes on to say. You should be able to appreciate things as an expression of big mind. This is more than faith. This is ultimate truth, which you cannot reject. Whether it is difficult or easy to practice. I think it's difficult to practice that. I think that's why we keep practicing with that. Sitting down, being open-hearted, letting those small thoughts go so that, as Dogen says, we can be awakened by the 10,000 things that are at our table. I think we need to practice that so that we can, that we can't reject that idea that, we're all expressions of big mind. Whether it's difficult or easy to practice, difficult or easy to understand, you can only practice it. To find yourself as someone who is doing something is the point, meaning practice. Am I practicing with this? When I go around the table and I get stuck at that person, at that cousin of mine, I've got to practice with that. I've got to find myself as someone who is doing this practice, to resume your actual being through practice, to resume the you, which is always with everything. Can I always be with that person at the table that has caused me to stop? I want to be the you, which is always with everything, with Buddha, which is fully supported by everything. Right now, you may say it's impossible, but it is possible. Even in one moment, you can do it. It is possible this moment. It is this moment. There's only us being connected right here in this moment. And this moment and our connection are not the same, or are exactly the same. That you can do it in this moment means that you can always do it. So if you have this confidence that I can do this, I can get through this whole meal and actually have a nice time with that cousin, with that brother, with that husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend of that cousin or brother. If you have this confidence, this is enlightenment. He says it pretty clearly that's our practice, to make sure that everybody is at the table, everybody is welcome, everybody feels their connection at the table. Some of us are going to be with family. Some of us are going to be with people that maybe we don't know so well. But we still, is everybody still welcome at your table as an expression of big mind? That's our everyday practice, and that's what we are celebrating tomorrow with a great feast of welcome and comfort and ease and connection at the table. I heard a lecture a couple of years ago. I think I spoke a little bit about this a couple of years ago after the lecture. It was given by Santa Cruz's own Reverend Deborah Johnson. And she was talking about activism in the world. And she was talking about non-dual activism. And she said that when we become active, when we go out to the Pride Parade, when we sit at the town clock to express this body and mind of climate change, when we when we march in the women's parade every year, the body and mind of our activism is the fact that we're always united, that there is no such thing as how did she say it? She said that, well, of course there's no difference between men and women's rights. Everyone has the same rights, and for that we are standing up. Of course everyone has the right to vote in the United States. So of course we will stand up to celebrate voting rights in America without hindrances or obscurations. So coming from the place that, well, of course there's no differences here. We're standing up for what is already true. Some people at the table might have been watching the House representative hearings the same time you were watching them, and I think we know that there's the feeling of division in this country, and maybe some of those divisions will be expressed at the dinner table tomorrow. We're such interesting human beings. We can hear the same thing, and one group of people will minimize what was said, and another group of people will absolutely maximize what's said. One group will say, you know, there's always politics in foreign policy. And another person will say, it's a crime and a misdemeanor to put politics in foreign policy. So we hear the same words, but we interpret them differently. We fall on different sides, just in the simplest sense, you know, for generations, we've all been chanting about one nation, indivisible, and so that's how our table should be, indivisible. Everyone is related. Everyone is striving for harmony and well-being and ease. And even when we look at that small table tomorrow and we're a little unsure of what side people are falling on, we can say, you know, we all want the same thing. We want ease. We want harmony. We want well-being. And Suzuki Roshi says we can have that mind and body right now. And if we can have it right now, we can have it all the time. And that's how Reverend Deborah Johnson approached activism. You know, we all want the same things. It's already here. And we're standing up for what already is. We can look around and appreciate the true nature of everyone at the table And it's our job to have the mind and body of harmony and well-being and ease right now and in every moment. We looked at a line in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra a couple of weeks ago in the Sunday morning class that Kokyo was teaching, saying that when we practice the precepts, when we practice being kind to each other, maybe that's a simple way to talk about our ethical codes in Buddhism, being kind, being connected, when we practice those precepts of not killing and lying and stealing and bragging and not being possessive, when we practice being kind and connected with each other, then we get a glimpse of the true face of all beings, of the open heart, the connected open heart. So practicing our precepts, being kind to each other at this table tomorrow, is a way of getting a glimpse of everyone's true face, of everyone's Buddha nature. And then maybe the last story I'll tell before our short ceremony will be from one of our ancestors, Liu Tiamo, Iron Grinder Liu, who was a nun, a Buddhist monk in the 700s in China. She grew up on a farm, and then when she got older, when she was able to leave home, she went to a Buddhist convent. And she worked very hard because of her years of helping out on the farm in a big family. And she studied hard. She was given the nickname Iron Grinder Liu because if you had a talk with her about the Dharma and you thought you had an ironclad idea about the Dharma, she could grind that iron down to dust, because she was so bright, and she could, if there was a little bit of delusion in your ironclad argument, she saw right through it. So, and she ultimately studied with Wei Shan, and she and Wei Shan have a dialogue. Iron Grindstone Liu arrived at Wei Shan. He named himself after the mountain where his monastery was. Iron Grindstone Liu arrived at Gui Shan, and Gui Shan said to her, "So you've come." Liu said, "Tomorrow there's a great feast There is Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow on Taishan. Are you going to go there, teacher? So she's saying there's a big party, there's a big feast. This sounds pretty familiar. Taishan was about 600 miles away in the late 700s in China. And it was tomorrow. And so there's a little bit of a disconnect. How are they going to get there? They're not going to get on a plane, that's for sure. Or a railroad. Tomorrow there's a great feast on Taishan. Are you going? And Guishan relaxed his body and lay down. And then Liu left. So I think this is a story about Liu and Guishan were abiding in big mind. They were abiding in big heart. They knew that they were already connected. They were already sitting around the great table of all beings, being nourished and supported and welcomed and put at ease by the great table of all beings. And they were already at that feast. They recognized everyone at that table by their original face already. Our big mind, our big heart, isn't dependent on time and place. Liu Tiamo was saying, do you recognize everyone at the table? And by just laying down and relaxing, Liu Tiamo was convinced that Guishan was abiding in big mind, in big heart, in original face, in Buddha nature, was realizing Buddha nature. I'm going to ask our Eno to pass out pencils and paper and chant cards now. And we're going to be writing down some names of people in our lives, and just thinking about people in our lives, they're right there with us right when that thought comes up. They're with us 100%. We're not separated by time and space when we can dwell on the face of our cousin, the face of our brother, the face of our sister. They're right there with us. Their whole history is right there. And that's the realm that Liu Tiamo and Guishan were abiding in during this conversation. They were already nourished and at ease and connected with all the people at the table. So people will get a pencil and a blank piece of paper, and on one side of the paper you can write number one, and the other side of the paper number two. And on that first side of the paper, write down somebody in your life that you've become somewhat estranged with. That there's a heart connection that's been severed because of a disagreement or a misunderstanding or a divide that put you on different sides from different sides with, where that heart connection is severed and broken, and just to go to the punchline, that's going to be a person that maybe we can reflect on, or to ourselves about, I want to be connected again. I'm grateful for that connection, and I want to feel more intimate with this person once again. So that can be number one on one side of the paper. And then number two, it will actually have a chance to, so on number one, there'll be a part in the ceremony where the, Kokyo, the chant leader, will give us a moment of silence where we can reflect on that person that we want to connect with, reconnect with, to heal a wound over, and so we'll be able to reflect silently on that person. Number two is the person that you're feeling that if they walked in the room right now, you would just say thank you, that I'm really grateful that you're in my life. And so, you know, we've got many of those. I think there's a lot of number ones and there's a lot of number twos in our life. But we'll have another sheet of paper for the next moment. Each moment we could do a number one and a number two in our lives. Because our true nature, because whether we think there's number ones in our life or number twos in our life, as Reverend Deborah Johnson says, we're already sitting at that table being nurtured by each other, by this great meal. There's no coming or going. We're coming from a place that there's a place at the table for everybody. And at some point in our practice, maybe in the next moment, this will be our enlightenment when we say, you know, this table is peaceful and harmonious, and I'm at ease at this table. So when we get to a point in the ceremony where we are giving thanks and gratitude, we'll go around the room and we will one at a time say that person's name, and it'll be clear when Ziggy says her person that she's thankful for. Then next will come Brian, and we'll go around the room this way, and we'll end up with Stan. Stan, you'll be the last one. We'll start over there. We'll go around the room one at a time. It'll be clear. So we'll have a chance to express our intention to heal wounds, and we'll have a chance to express our thanks for at least one person in our life. And the next moment we'll thank another person. So thank you all.